Hey, folks, welcome to the show. This weekend, October 18th and 19th, I'm going to be in Royal Oak, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. Great club, Comedy Castle. If you guys are in the area, please come on out, check out a show. The four shows, Comedy Castle, go online to get tickets. Royal Oak, Michigan, this Friday and Saturday, October 18th and 19th. Had an interesting weekend. Was looking for new floor mats for my car. It was on Amazon. And, you know, they have those little boxes on the side of the page where the product is, and one of them is a video. Well, I found myself spending close to 90 minutes watching videos of people installing floor mats. I became mesmerized. I have no problem-solving skills anymore because of YouTube, so I really think I need some help. I spent 90 minutes watching videos of people installing floor mats, and I got to run in a minute because I've got 2 hours of video to watch on how to open up a jar of pickles. So I got a busy day ahead of me. My guest this week, Chris Hayes, host of All In with Chris Hayes on MSNBC. He's got a great podcast, Why Is This Happening?, that he's taking out on tour. We talk about that and where things stand in the political discourse in our country right now. He's got a lot of great insights from his vantage point of being one of the major shows covering news and politics today. So enjoy Chris. Hope to see you at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan this weekend, October 18th and 19th. And go get some floor mats. But you're going to need time to figure out how to install them. My guest this week is a host of All In with Chris Hayes on MSNBC and the podcast Why Is This Happening? I love the title. He's been on tour with this podcast, doing live events around the country in various cities. And October 21st, he's going to be in Los Angeles at the theater at the Ace Hotel. It's Chris Hayes. Great to have you on, Chris.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much I want to talk to you about, especially given what's everything that's going on in the world. But the why is this happening? What prompted you to sort of approach the podcast in that way? Is it your way to sort of drill down in terms of not just topical issues, but sort of why politically the country is where it is right now?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we do a show 5 nights a week at 8 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC, and it's a TV show. It's for an hour. And the sheer volume of news means that, you know, there's so many things that we don't have time to go into. We don't have time to cover, particularly things that are complex, like the history of, you know, reconstruction in this country and how that affects modern day politics. It's just hard to do that in an hour long program. But even things like that are happening in the world, like the war in Yemen, or what the Chinese government is doing to the Muslim population called the Uyghurs in the western part of that country. So I constantly found myself wanting to kind of like have long conversations where I could work through the stuff and learn from people that are experts. And so we made that into a podcast called Why Is This Happening, which we've been doing now for about a year and a half. It's been great. And it allows us this kind of venue to have these deeper conversations amidst the psychotic pace of the news cycle. Mm-hmm. So we've done live events a few times. We did one with Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor in Georgia. We did one with Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I'm going to be with Adam McKay, the great Adam McKay, comedy writer and brilliant drama director and screenwriter who did The Big Short and Vice, among others. And he's thinking about how to talk about climate change, how to represent it on film and TV. And this author, Omar Akkad, who wrote an amazing book about sort of sci-fi dystopian future of a civil war inspired by climate change in the U.S. So we're going to be talking about how you wrestle with the enormity of it as a creator.
Well, you know, Adam is great. I had him on my podcast when he did The Big Short, and he's really found a way to sort of walk a line of taking sort of thick issues, if you will, but make them accessible and entertaining. And so you don't feel like you're being lectured to. And I think I'm sure it's going to be great. I mean, do you know, climate change is so tricky an issue because, you know, we're very, no pun intended, polarized in the country, where you have some people just refusing to even believe that the science is legitimate. How do you think you convince those people that there really is a legitimate problem?
I don't think you can, honestly. Like, I think in some ways I do think the debate about, like, is it happening has largely subsided. I think the question now is, what do we do about it and how do we go about doing it? Mm. I think that it's not true that that's a unanimously held view. Obviously, there's Republican policymakers who are still holdouts. But by and large, I think the big questions now are about the pace of what we do and the scope of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when I see the title, Why Is This Happening? There was a sort of an immediate sort of macro question for me, which is the current sort of tone and tenor of discourse, politics generally in the country, right? Is like literal, like I almost said these words a few times screaming at the TV, like, why is this, right? Like, and the question for me is now not so much why, but how? And I'm really fascinated from where you sit, because you're at the epicenter of it every night. How did we get here where it's so divisive and it's so, and I'm not pointing fingers at one side or the other. It's just such an unhealthy, dysfunctional way for us to be as a society, I think. How did we get here, do you think?
I mean, the answer to that is longer than I either can provide or have the time to. But
yeah.
I think there's two ways to think about it. I mean, one is, I think about this a lot, like, the two generations before us, right? So the so-called greatest generation, but the generation that lived through the last great conflagration in the world, World War II, they saw firsthand that stability and peace and prosperity and liberal democracy, particularly freedom, are delicate and not guaranteed. They don't just go on forever without tending to. And in fact, most of the history of humans on the world, on the planet, has been a lot of terrible oppression and conflict. And I think that we lost sight of that as we got further and further from that, as we got further and further, I think also from the threat of, you know, nuclear war with the Soviets and the Cold War. There's a kind of complacency that, like, oh, you know, everything, democracy is the natural end state. Everyone just sort of evolves towards it. And then, you know, we'll be all good. And the fact of the matter is, democracy is really hard. And conflict between different groups of people is inherent to every social order ever created by humankind. It's inherent to how the human animal conceives of the world. And we work very hard to try to, like, support the institutions of freedom, liberty, democracy, and civilization over barbarism, tribalism, and bigotry, and hatred, and violence. And that struggle is a never-ending one. And I think we're in a moment right now where the reality of that is clearer to us than it has been in a while, though we're sort of confronted and faced with the fact that things that we hold as given aren't given, and that we have to work very hard for them.
Yeah, that's a really great perspective. That makes a lot of sense to me. And you're right. I do think it is a hard thing. Democracy is difficult. And one of the things you've talked about, sort of, which I really admire, is, you know, I have this concern that everybody's sort of, a lot of people are in their silos, right? And they only want reaffirmation of what they already know and think about. And you've talked about the podcast, for example, being a great thing because you likened it to the New Yorker magazine, which you get. And there may be something in the New Yorker that you may not necessarily be interested in, but you find yourself reading it anyway because you give the New Yorker the benefit of the doubt. You say, your quote is, you said, I trust what you guys are up to. I trust the quality. And I'm going to allow myself to be taken in directions I wouldn't necessarily choose myself. And that last phrase really captured a lot for me because nobody, you know, you talked about watching Fox News and reading conservative papers, et cetera, but very few, not a lot of people are doing that these days. And I think that's a dangerous place for us to be going, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the polarization to me is even almost a subset of a larger issue, which is just the kind of way the attentional economy works and how many claims are being made on our time and how many things are trying to get us to click. And, you know, there's the sort of polarization part of that, the confirmation bias, people seeking out things they already agree with. Although, again, that's a sort of fairly natural human instinct.
Sure.
It's been true in many different times in many different places.
Right.
But to me, that's part of a larger problem of just, like, the ability to sustain any kind of, like, sustained thought. It's harder and harder.
because people are just, the demands between Twitter and Instagram, all of these sort of things just sort of coming at us, that people don't have the ability to sort of drill down and focus a little bit. You think that's part of the problem too?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think we have a lot of things that are working very hard in very sophisticated ways to take our attention. And so reasserting command over what we pay attention to is a sort of minute by minute struggle.
Yeah. You know, you've also talked about, like, the distinction between good faith and bad faith, you know,
in terms of an approach to a particular issue or topic, and you said, I guess there are people who oppose the Iran deal, oppose it in good faith, but some people may traffic in a lot of bad faith when it comes to that deal. I thought that was a really, really interesting point, because I don't know, it feels like less and less that people are making that distinction between good faith and bad faith, you know? And I think that's important, as you've pointed out, to being able to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't agree with you, but not have it turn into this sort of screaming match or whatever it might be. And do you see that this good faith, bad faith thing is sort of becoming more and more fuzzy over time?
I think it's always fuzzy. I mean, I think things that I think I would label bad faith, other people would say, oh no, you know, that's wrong. And I think there are people who think that the arguments I make are bad faith. So that, you know, it's a hard distinction to draw. It's one I try to draw for myself, just because I want to try to force myself to engage with things I don't agree with when I think they're offered in good faith. I mean, look, I just did an hour long, the first date on our With Pod tour, the Why Is This Happening fall tour that we're doing. The first date was in Austin, Texas, in front of 800 or 900 people with Ted Cruz for an hour. Now, Ted Cruz and I don't really agree on just about anything. Mm-hmm. And we didn't like sit up there and pretend we did and play patty cake. We had a substantive engagement, but it was, you know, with maybe a few exceptions, like he was arguing for things that he believes in, I think. And I was arguing for things I believe in and questioning him about it. And like, that's part of the basic functioning of democracy, I think. I think there is some degree to which, like, you just got to encounter people and try to keep things away from sort of cynical, hacky, point scoring, whataboutism, and actually sort of try to drill down, engage on things about what do you believe, what kind of world do you want to see, how do you think we can get there, and sort of work off those basics.
Is that sort of one of the goals of the podcast and taking it out on the tour, is sort of maybe to present some ideas to people in a live format and in a long form way that they may not otherwise be exposed to, and vice versa, and be able, because I think it's great that you're sort of having people from different walks of life in these conversations, and it's not just everyone on the left or everyone on the right or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that there's a real thirst for in-depth conversation and like just depth in general, and listening to people sort of think through things, not with like a kind of polemical surety, but instead to actually be open and intellectually curious. And that's something that I think is really important to me. It's how I kind of operate in the world. It's how the podcast operates. It's how these live conversations operate. And I think it's really like, there's something refreshing about it.
Yeah. You know, you've talked about the erosion of norms and, you know, this, when you're covering the news in the way you have to. And it's funny, you know, because like when I worked on the Daily Show before the Late Show, and like, you know, you'd have, we tape around 5:30-ish, so you rehearse around 3, and then there's a rewrite. But the news is breaking so much so quickly over the course of the day that there's more and more often now the scripts have to be rewritten at the last minute because you have to stay current. And things are moving so fast. How do you not become, as you said, inured to the stark deviations from certain basic norms, particularly under this president, and sort of not just start to kind of lose sight of that in the throes of everything that you're going through on a daily basis to cover the news?
That is it. I mean, you put your finger on one of our biggest struggles. I mean, there's sort of two things I'm trying to avoid. One is allowing the aberrant or outrageous to become normalized. And that's a word that, you know, people use a lot, and they probably use it so much it's lost a little bit of its punch. But it is true that we have been acclimated to all kinds of things that in other settings we would find as abnormal and awful. Mm-hmm. You know, the president's son-in-law and daughter work in the White House with a public brief, and they made $82 million last year while working in the White House trading off their names. Like, that in itself would be a scandal normally. Like, you can't do that, right? And that's just like, that's not even a top 100 story this week that they made $82 million together working in the White House. And she made them off the Trump org, which the president directly profits from and hasn't divested from and clearly is still active and involved in. Like, so that's just a bit. So at one level, it's like, you don't want things to normalize. At the other, this thing I always say to my staff is, you know, the dial only goes to 10. And once it goes to 10, you can't go to 11, like in, you know, Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
So if you go to 10 too early, you don't have any space to go up.
Yep.
If everything is a 10, then nothing's a 10. If everything's crazy and the worst thing that's ever happened and unprecedented, then you lose sense of proportion. And so that's the other thing to sort of guard against on the other side.
Yeah, I think that's right. Listen, before we wrap, I mean, I hope you don't feel like you're yelling into the abyss about that, because, you know, it's funny, you know, over the last two or three years with this president, you'd see people, particularly on, you know, maybe MSNBC and CNN, going, don't he understand things aren't done that way? And it's like, at one point I just said, you have to stop saying that. He doesn't care if the way things are done. And we have to hold those norms and continue to support them. But I can imagine, I don't know if some days you feel like, boy, you're just, you know, yelling into the abyss. I don't know if you ever feel that way, but it just seems like it's a lot of work that you guys have to do to kind of not follow the bouncing ball and get distracted and stay, you know, all of that. It's a tremendous, yeah. Well, listen, it's great to have you on. The tour is going next to Los Angeles, the Ace Hotel, October 21st, and you're going to be talking about climate change pretty much, right?
Yeah, we're talking, like, Adam, you know, Adam's in a brilliant writer and director and creator, comedian, dramatist, and he's thinking a lot about how do you represent climate change in art, in pop culture, on TV, on the screens. And we're also joined by this great author, Omar Al-Elkad, who wrote an incredible book called American War, which is a sci-fi novel set in a future in which there's a civil war in the U.S. over climate, over fossil fuels. And we're going to talk about how they think about and are working towards representing this kind of epochal civilizational challenge in our culture.
Got it. It sounds, I wish I could be there, but, and I assume you're going to be doing more of these live events over the upcoming months?
Yep. We're going to do Chicago in November, New York in December. If you're in Los Angeles, October 21st, you can search on Ticketmaster under my name. It's a great venue. It's going to be a great night, so come check it out.
Yeah, I know the venue. It really is. Well, good luck with it. It's important that you're doing it, and keep up the great work on the MSNBC show. It's great to have you on. Chris Hayes, everybody.
Awesome.
All right, there you go. That's Chris Hayes. Such a smart guy. I was really excited to talk to him because of his unique insight from where he sits in the middle of all of this, the news cycle that it is what it is today. Please come check out a show this weekend, October 18th and 19th, the Royal Oak, Michigan Comedy Castle. And hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next week.